Welcome, everyone, to Freedom Law School's weekly conference call on this Thursday, October 6, 2016. This is Peyman Mutahedeh, the founder and president of Freedom Law School, and your host for this weekly program. Every Thursday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Time Zone, 4 o'clock Pacific Time Zone, I conduct these weekly conference calls in which I answer any and all of your freedom law questions on how to help you live free of oppressive taxation control. Because America was meant to be a free country, and you were meant to live free. And that's why I started Freedom Law School 20 years ago in 1996 to educate average, ordinary Americans like you and how to live free. And what was the motivation for that? What got that going? Well, what really got me going on it was the shock that I had back in 1992 when some wonderful patriots taught me and showed me that there is no law requiring the average American, like you or me, to file and pay the federal income tax. Verified it for myself. I'll look at the Constitution. I'll look at the 1040 booklet I had from a few years ago, had signed one. I look at the IRS code, and I found out, wow, we've been lied to. We have been deceived. Folks, there is no law requiring you to file income tax. And last week, I talked about how this law professor from George Washington Law University in Washington, D.C., attempted to make a claim on the Freedom Law School's $300,000 income tax reward. And guess what? He failed. And he failed not just because I get to be the referee. No, he failed because the law is not on his side. In my rebuttal, in my decision letter to him, in email, I relied completely on U.S. Constitution, U.S. Supreme Court cases, IRS code, and congressional documents, the government's own documents, back up the fact that there is no law requiring you or me or the average American to file and pay the federal income tax. We've been scammed for a long time at the same time that there are laws that crooked politicians and people in power like Hillary Rotten Clinton have violated, but they don't get prosecuted for that. The big banks, Chase, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citi, these crooks and criminals, Wells Fargo, have committed many crimes against the American people to the tune of tens, if not hundreds, of billions of dollars against Americans. Yet the federal government does not prosecute these criminals. It just all shows you we've lost the control of our government. We no longer have a government by, of, and for we the people. We have a government by, of, and for the big banks and corporations and the well-connected politicians and special interests. That's it. As long as Hillary Clinton does the bidding of the banksters and big corporations, all those people that pay her campaign contributions, political campaign contributions, so she can get on TV and lie. Says, I always been for children. She can pay for that and deceive people with her lies, and people buy it. Oh, what a wonderful lady. She loves children, right? As long as they can do that, folks, That's all they care about. So we got to get our country back, get our government back. And it starts with each of us educating ourselves. And then once we are informed, we can take action. We can take action that actually works and produce measurable, winning solution and results for you. And that's what Freedom Law School is all about. First, educating you so that you can take proper, intelligent action to live free now. And then we can collectively also take better action. That's right. Collectively, folks, we ought to return America to freedom. Each and every one of us has a right, has a duty to educate ourselves and take action. So with that, folks, I'll be answering your questions on this Commerce Call every Thursday night. Freedom Law School has courses that will help you live free, that will educate you, that will give the answers, as well as provide solutions with our courses and freedom packages. So if you're under attack by the government, the IRS, traffic tickets, police, bureaucrats of any kind, you have Freedom Law School in your corner 100% of the time. So I'm hopeful that I can answer most of your questions on this Commerce Call, if not all of them. Sometimes that may not be enough. You may need one of our courses, freedom packages, or private one-on-one consultation, or somebody else can better assist you. No matter what, I'm going to direct you to a direction you want and need to go to find the freedom answers that you are looking for. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to open up the call to your questions. Now, if you have a question about the law professor, what we talked about last week, some of you may have missed the call last week. I'm having a three-part series on this law professor, how he lost his claim to claim $300,000 income tax reward of Freedom Law School. So if you have questions about what I talked about last time or I was going to cover that you missed it out, if you missed out on that, I'd be happy to talk about, you know, Professor Siegel's claim and what happened there. But next week, folks, I'm going to talk about the part two of this, what happened with Professor Siegel. So let's see if you guys have any questions. If you do, remember to protect your privacy. You should not give me your last name because this is a public call. Any government or IRS agent could be on the call recording it and using it against you. So only give me your first name, the state you're calling from, and that will be enough. Also, I would like to know how you guys hear about Freedom Law School, because we need to reach more people, educate more Americans, wake up more Americans to the truth of what's going on to our country and our government, and how we got to get it back to we the people once again. So your feedback as to how you heard about Freedom Law School is very helpful. So with that, let's go to the call from area code 847. If you have a question, my friend, give me your first name, the state you're calling from, and how did you hear about Freedom Law School, and then your question, please.
Hi, I'm Kevin. I'm in Illinois. And I have your level one course. I forgot how I found out about you.
Okay, very good, Kevin. You got a level one course. By the way, Kevin, how much of the level one course have you listened to so far?
When I first got it, I got it like last year. And I could have sworn I remember you saying in there to listen to it like in your car. And I think that's bad advice. Instead, you should do what I did and stop. Take time aside and write notes throughout the entire class. And that's what I did. And because you really have to do it to get to know what's going on. But the reason I called today is because I got a ticket. It's an ordinance violation. And I'd like to know if you could tell me whether or not my analysis of what's happening is correct or not.
Okay. By the way, on level one course, let me agree with you. I recommend people listen in the car first so they get the flavor of the course. And some people
Yeah, that'd be
do
a good
pretty good
idea.
listening
Yeah.
to it. Yeah. But I do
Yeah, like
recommend after listening to
you
it a couple
really
of
have
times to sit down would be better. Of course, it's better. No question. It is better. What happens, Kevin, is that a lot of people complain to me they don't have the time to sit down and listen to, over 20 hours of audio and video. So I tell them that, well, at least listen to it in the car a couple of three times. You're going to get a lot of it in there, better than nothing, better than not making the time at all to sit down and listen to the course. I'm glad you're one of those that did take the time, my friend, to educate yourself. Very good. And tell us about level one. Tell our callers on your honest opinion feedback about level one course of freedom law school, which is called A Practical Road to Freedom from Oppressive Taxation and Control, level one. A course on law and procedures for those who are committed to living a free life. So tell our listeners what's your opinion about it, good or bad? Let's hear it all.
Great. I totally recommend it. But like he just said about how he suggested people listen to it in the car, and how he said it's better if you listen to it on your own time and you stop and take notes. You treat it like a real class. It's way better if you do that. It's exactly how it's titled. It's A Practical Road to Freedom. I suggest everybody know it. He will show you the law. He will teach you how to look it up for yourself and how to prove everything on your own, so you verify what he's saying. And I totally suggest that everybody should know it.
Well, thank you for that feedback, Kevin. What is on your mind tonight, my friend?
Right. I got a ticket in the mail. It's for an ordinance violation, along with a letter from the cops telling me to pay up. And this ticket was like from 1 month before the date on the letter. So, like he claims to put something on my car, but I never got something, so I just got a ticket in the mail. And I never got any note in a, or point. This letter that came with the ticket, it said that they had a hearing for me for somewhere in the city, and they determined that I was liable for it. And I never got any notification about this until this crap came in the mail. And I had like 14 days to reply to them. So I went to go look at the Supreme Court rules in my state for ordinance violations, the Supreme Court rules of procedure, and they broke them. So I replied to their letter within the required time, saying that they had no proof I even got the original ticket on my car. And I put in there my notice of intent to sue. And I didn't waive my rights or anything. After that, I got a letter from an out-of-state debt collector saying that I owe $75 now, along with my rights to dispute it, and so on. So I called the debt collector within the time I was allowed, and I said I didn't owe anything. So they put it in dispute, and I told them the cops already know my intent to sue if they damage me. But after that, like a week after that, the cops sent me their verification of the debt, and I put that word verification in quotes because it's not even a verification at all. It's not proof of anything. And they put in that same letter a copy of my original letter saying that I owe them nothing and all that. A few days later, I get another letter from the debt collector saying that they're still trying to collect the debt. And then something like after like 90 to 120 days, the alleged debt will be reported to a credit reporting agency, which I don't know how that damages me. And it's only been about 45 days so far. So after this, I went to read the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act in the U.S. Code. And I didn't read the whole thing, but from what I read, I and the debt collector filed the law, but from what I read of it, it says if the debt collector wants to bring any legal action against me, they have to do it in the court where I'm at, in the county I'm at. And so does the cop. And on the ticket that I got in the mail, the cop had checked, no court appearance required if paid within 30 days. And since there was no court date set, nor was there any notice given to me about it, and when I had read the Supreme Court rules of procedure, how ordinance violations have to go through the court, and also proven in the U.S. Code's Debt Collection Practices Act, it seems really obvious to me that they're just hoping I'm stupid and they're trying to scam me without having to go through a court. And it seems like they're either bluffing, like they're trying to test my knowledge of law, or they're really stupid. So my only path would be for them to hurt my credit rating or whatever it is they do. I've never had any credit problems in the past. And then after they damage me, I dig up laws to sue them in retaliation, like deprivation of my due process rights. And I know if they were dumb enough to use a court, they couldn't prove anything anyway, and I already have the laws and their own documents to prove they did everything wrong. So I was wondering, Do you have any experience with stuff like this? And would you consider my analysis of this correct?
You're not that far off. I think you're looking for a solution, and the solution in this situation is that basically the problem
Yes.
stems from the fact that first of all, you can write the debt collector within 30 days that you don't owe them, that there's no valid judgment because you never, were notified
I
of
called them.
this. Con doesn't do any good. You got to put
I
it in
called.
writing. Con doesn't do any good. They're gonna ignore that. If you want to really do something, the main thing needs to happen, Kevin, is you need to go file a petition to the court to set aside a motion to set aside the judgment. There was obviously a ticket issued without notifying you. One, two, there was a hearing took place without notifying you because you didn't get the ticket, and therefore there was a judgment entered against you without you being known about it. So you need to file a motion to set aside the judgment in that case. If you don't have a case number, go to a court. The clerk of the court will give it to you. Okay. And just a caption hereby, Kevin, the petitioner herein petitions to remove, set aside his judgment for the following reasons. And you say, I never got a ticket. I never no, no, was notified by a hearing. So the judgment was entered without me being having my due process of being known about it. Then you attach to that, very important, a statement under oath, which is called the declaration. The heading of it is just declaration. Declaration of Kevin, right? You put your full name in there and you say, I, Kevin so and so, declare under the penalty of perjury laws of state of Illinois the following. Hey, I never got a ticket for this case. I was never informed of the hearing. I only found out about this thing because when I got this thing in the mail, see copy attached, exhibit number one, and this other thing I got in it too. So since I never, that's it. And you sign and date it. You attach that declaration to your motion. Now that's a fact. When you declare something under oath or under penalty of perjury, it's a fact. It's no different than you go on a jury trial testifying. They have to accept that as fact unless someone can refute it. Well, they can't refute it because there's nobody else that knows about that. So when you make that motion, they have to set it aside. Now, the hearing date either set aside by you with the clerk of the court, or the clerk of the court will set them up. That you have to find out the procedures of that court. You may need to call the clerk of the court about that stuff. Okay. So, but that's what you need to do, my friend, in this situation, to set aside that judgment. Then you're gonna get a, and get a to give you a new trial date afterwards to challenge everything correctly, properly. Okay.
To be honest,
Does that make sense?
yeah, but all right. I've had other tickets before, and when I went to the website for the court, you could type in the ticket number and it'll give you the case number. I didn't do that with this ordinance yet. I didn't even know it had, if a cop pulls you over, he has a court date set. So to be honest, I didn't even know that, it might even be up there. So I'll check that out because I knew what to do. If it was like that, like if he had put a court date on there, how I could go to the website and be like, okay, you have an ongoing case, and then I can file motions. But yeah, I'll do that. So just if it's up there, I'll just file a petition to set aside the judgment, and I'll just put my reasons in there in my motion for dismissing it because they didn't follow the rules
Yeah,
and all that.
to set aside to set
Okay, cool.
aside to set aside the judgment.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Very good. I'm glad you called, Kevin. I hope it works out for you. Let us know how it goes, my friend. I love to hear success stories and victories of you. If you go to Freedom Law School's website, you see there's a link on the top called Our Victories, and there you'll see victories of Freedom Law School and myself, Paymon, the president of Freedom Law School. You see our students' victory against the IRS, and then there's a lot of those, and even against the California Franchise Tax Board. But these kind of victories, I like to at least have them put them on the conference call. And sometimes I'm gonna put them on more of them on my website. There's a lot more victories that we have than what's on our webpage, but at least you get a flavor of it. I want you to win. I want to hear about you winning, my friend. Thank you, Kevin, for calling. Let's go to our
Sure. Thank
caller
you.
from area code 916. If you have a question, call from area code 916. Please announce yourself and then tell us how you heard about Freedom Law School. And then your
I'm just
question.
listening, Raymond. Thank you. Just listening.
You're, you, You're welcome, my friend. Let's go to a caller. We have from area code 630. If you have a question, please go ahead and give me your first name, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then your question. Okay, no question from a call area code from area code 630. How about the call from area code 715? If you have a question, announce yourself now. Okay, no question from the call of area code 715. We have a, how about a call from area code 971? The call from area code 971, have a question? If so, please announce yourself now. Okay, no one from the question there. How about the call from area code 715? Do you have a question? If so, please announce yourself now.
Hi, my name is Carl. I'm from Wisconsin.
I'm sorry, could you repeat your name, please? Carl, you said?
Yes, Carl from Wisconsin.
With a C or a K?
With a K.
Okay, very good. From Wisconsin. Yes, my friend. How did you hear about Freedom Law School?
I'm involved with Bob Schultz and We the People Congress, We the People Foundation, and I heard of you through, you know, all the guys there, you know, through the people there.
Well, that was about 14, 15 years ago, my friend.
Well, yeah, and then all through the 2000s, of course, you know, we had that, we produced Articles of Freedom at the Continental Congress that we set up in St. Charles, Illinois. So we were moving all through the, you know, through the, you know, through the 2000s there. And we still have some things going on, even to this day that we're working on right now. So, we'll be having a big teleconference in just a few days. In let's see, when it's a teleconference, will probably be in November, actually, just prior to what we have the deer season here in Wisconsin. So, anyways, my question is, I was wondering what you thought about this position. I kind of talked about this last week, but I just kind of want to hit on it again just a little bit. How would you handle this? The state of Wisconsin, I kind of mentioned this before, but I want to just bring this up again and see if we get any more thoughts. The state of Wisconsin produced a new law in 2011 that allows sidearms for personal protection to be in a vehicle. And when I was pulled over for a traffic stop, which is unlawful, they saw the firearm on the floor of the vehicle. And I thought that I was, you know, obeying the law because I helped with our grassroots organizations to help to draft that bill. And my understanding is that we could have a firearm in the car without a permit because that's exactly what the law says. How would you handle that, Payman? What do you think?
What did they do? They took your gun away. They gave you a ticket. What did they do, Carl?
Well, they pulled me over because I didn't have a vehicle registration sticker on the vehicle. Because I know that I have the right to travel, and I know that because of federal and Supreme Court case law, that they cannot force you to accept a license and pay a fee for something that's your right. That'd be like paying a fee for voting or paying a fee for, you know, to go into any public school regardless of your race, for example. Americans do not pay for rights that are God endowed, and they are not to be licensed. If they give you a license, they can take away that right, or they can regulate it out of existence, and therefore they do not have the right to force anybody to have a vehicle registration or a driver's license, because that is a God or endowed right, unless, of course, you're running for commercial purposes, but that's, I wasn't doing that. I wasn't running for commercial purposes. So, how do you think that you would handle that? I'm thinking that I'm going to fight them just on the issue of the fact that they had no right to pull me over, and there's federal and Supreme Court case law to back that in the first place. And then, of course, then they violated my Fourth Amendment rights right away to be safe in my person, papers, and effects, you know, and then they arrested me and handcuffed me because I had that firearm on the ground. Now, you know, the law is very confusing because the law says that you can have a sidearm in the vehicle without a permit. That's literally what the law says. being a person of the United States, I thought I was obeying the law, you know. That would be my other argument. So, but
well, let me tell you about that. Let me ask you, because I got the other people waiting, my friend. It's pretty simple, Carl. Go to court, fight it, and challenge it, and say, hey, this the law says what I did was completely legal. They were wrong in taking my charging me falsely and taking my gun. Okay, so
the one part now, that I failed to tell you, Payman, the one part yes. that I failed to tell you, though, is that the courts have been falling back somehow on an old 1988 law that, you know, we thought was superseded by the 2011 law.
Uh-huh.
And the something in the 1988 law says that if you have a sidearm in the car, it has to be visible from all angles from the outside. And some courts in Wisconsin have even said, you know, since 2011, that it has to literally be on the dashboard. Well, I'm not going to be driving my vehicle with a loaded sidearm on my dashboard, okay? I'm not going to be doing that. I think that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so, so that's what the courts are falling back on, okay? And I talked to the State of Wisconsin Legislative Bureau, the head attorney over there. He said, you know, we knew that this was going to happen because we didn't define what concealed carry means in a vehicle. And he said he kind of knew that was going to happen. He knew that somebody would, you know, he figured that this was going to have to work its way in the courts, you know, up to a higher level of court and, get to where they had started using that old 1988 law and then fight it there, you know. So anyways, that's where we're at on that thing. And, you know, I was wondering what you thought because, you know, potentially they could put me away. I think it's for 6 months. And a $9,000 fine or something, a $10,000 fine, I think it is, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. So this is pretty serious kind of sort of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention that they confiscated two of my sidearms. You know, I had a VP-40 and a Smith & Wesson 44 underneath the other seat, and I couldn't even reach that one. So, you know, I can fight that one kind of pretty easy. There's no way I could have gotten that one. You know, it was way underneath the seat. I mean, it wasn't even reachable from my driver's seat, you know. So, I just wanted to see what you had to say about all that. I've been pretty busy with a lot of different things working. You know, I work with, Carolyn Clive and Bundy and stuff like that, and Amon Bundy and stuff. So I'm kind of associated with the trials out there in Portland, Oregon right now, and, you know, a bunch of other things and a bunch of freedom organizations across the United States. So, you know, I was kind of wondering if, some of them might want to work with me on this thing.
Well, it looks like you have a lawyer on this issue working with you guys already. I would work with that guy because I don't have the language of the law in front of me to even discuss it. The technicalities and interpretation of it, but I would fight to the fullest extent. And if the law wasn't very clear, that's a very strong defense also, that you had good intent. You did not intend
right.
to break the law. So with that, yep. whether the law requires intent or not, the other law is important. I don't know if that does or not. But if it requires intent, you win on that issue of not having intent. But usually gun laws, they're not – they don't require intent. They just, you did it, too bad, you broke the law type of a thing. But even then, the yeah. judge himself, though, has discretion. Yes, he can give you up to 6 months, technically, but the judges don't want to do that. They're not usually jerks, you know, especially something that's like this, which is kind of political, and they see it, and they understand it, what's going on here.
Right.
You want people to help draft the law, and that goes a lot, Bob. You are one of the people to draft the law, correct?
Right. Well, me and my groups
yeah.
here in the state of Wisconsin, Tea Party groups, grassroots organizations, we were working with the state legislatures, and our understanding is that they were really close to passing constitutional carry, which is what we were really, you know, going for. And but Scott Walker, our governor here, said, you know, that's going a little too fast, too far too fast. And I don't want to go that far right now. So give me something else that I can sign. You know, so then we fell back on this other law, where we could at least have a sidearm in the car and without a permit, because that's what the law states. And so now, all of a sudden, unbeknownst to me, the courts are going back on the law. They're violating the meaning, purpose, and intent of the law, you know. Now, there's some legislators who didn't want to go that far to begin with, and there's some legislators...
Well, hold on. You're going too far. Carl, stop. We don't have unlimited time to discuss all the minutia of this legislation. It's not relevant, okay? Yeah. But you asked me how to help you, and what I'm telling you is what you want to do. You want to bring the sponsor of this law, okay, in the court about the intent of the law. The sponsor will have the intent. And the sponsor of the law also can say that he discussed it with you, and you actually were part of the drafting of the law. Guess what? Your intent and his intent now become the law, because intent is what matters. Intent is the language of the law, and also if the language of the law is not clear enough, then they go on to the head of the person who wrote the law, which is legislature, and you in part who involved in it. So in this case, that's what you want to do in this case. Work with an attorney, my friend. You're not gonna get any jail time. I'm not worried about it. You got so much on your side. The judge is gonna take this very unpolitical doing this, because you know the case is going on because the prosecutors are pushing it through, but the judge doesn't have to do that. You know, as long as you've been civil and respectful and do things properly, you know, this case could be a good case for you guys to go back to Walker and say, "Bud, guess what? You didn't want to do the law the way it should have been. Here's the result." Right. So we need to get the new law passed. This is the way we want to do it, the first way, because this is the result. The prosecutors, the executive branch, and the judges interpret it in any twisted way they can against the people.
Right.
So we got to write a new law that it cannot be in any way twisted against the people. So in a way, it's a blessing in disguise for you, Carl, and your group, and your cause, and the people in your state. Use it that way.
Okay. Sounds good, Payman. Thank you very much for your words of wisdom, and hopefully the good Lord will be on my side on this thing.
Yeah, and let us know how the results is. I'll be curious to see what happened.
Roger, Wilco. Okay, well, thank you, Payman.
You're welcome, my friend. Okay, folks, I get all different kind of freedom law questions on Freedom Law School's weekly conference calls. And here's the one that I don't do every day, but I believe in very strongly in the right to keep and bear arms. It's a very important right. And so we got to defend all those rights. If we do not know the law and our rights and the proper procedures to assert those rights, we lose. You know, I wish we didn't have to learn all this, but guess what? It's not our fault. We were not taught these things in high school. We were not taught how to read and write very well in school. You know, my best friends in high school came out not being able to write more than two words. Two words is all he could write on a piece of paper, getting out of high school. A lot of people don't do a lot better than that. But what he did, at age 27, he went to college, took remedial courses, and learned how to read and write, and now he reads books. See, all of us were raised ignorant out of high school and university about law and our rights. We should know these very basic stuff. Our public servants do. Why don't we? So it's up to each and every one of us to do like Kevin did and educate ourselves. And unfortunately, Freedom Law School is the only organization I know out there who puts classes to teach you the fundamentals of law, your rights, the Constitution, and procedures so you can use them to live free. Does it mean you handle everything completely? Of course not. Any situation? Of course not. But it gives you so much the basics that you can handle yourself. And then with a little bit of assistance, as you heard, Kevin, with a little guidance, he knows how to do the rest of it himself. Carl, I recommend very strongly, my friend, get Freedom Law School's Level 1 and Level 2 courses, both. Those two courses are very intense. A lot of information, about 45 hours of instruction on the Constitution and law, your rights and procedures that will help you win in these battles with confidence, with peace of mind, folks. You don't have to be nervous. Yes, it's always exciting when your pocketbook or your freedom is at stake. But it helps when you go with confidence, know what you're doing, know what your rights are, and know that you can and will win because the facts and the law are both on your side. So with that, folks, let's see if we have some other callers with question. Let's go to our caller from area code 516 in New York. Do you have a question? Caller from area code 516. If so, please announce yourself now.
Hello, Payman. My name is Randy, and no questions, just listening.
All right, my friend. Thank you for being on the call listening. Now, I have two callers that the numbers don't show up from area code. And it shows 111111. I'm going to unmute both of you. Okay. Let's see. See if I can. If you have a question, announce yourself, and I'll figure out who the other person is and mute the other person and let you talk. Do either of you two callers, who your numbers are showing, you know, anonymous basically, have a question? If so, please announce yourself now. No questions? Okay. Well, I'd like to talk the rest of this call about an issue of voting and its upcoming election. You've all heard they say that you should vote. No matter what, vote. Well, guess what? I disagree with that, and so would founding fathers of America, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Franklin. They would all disagree with this claim out there in the media and politicians that you should always vote. You should not vote if you do not know the candidates enough to make an intelligent choice. That's right, folks. Why? If you just vote because this guy looks better, sounds better, you know, or you might choose the wrong guy, the wrong person. You better stay out of it and let the other people who are informed make the choice versus you voting for the person if you don't know nothing about these people. So most people usually know something about, for example, the presidential candidate running, have that choice on that one. Not enough knowledge they have, but they know something. But maybe you have senatorial or U.S. Senate races, U.S. Congress, House of Legislature races, state races, governor, the representatives, county commissioners, you know, city officials, so I suggest if you don't know who you're voting for, don't understand which one's better and why, don't vote. You might vote for the wrong guy and then feel bad because you kept the good guy out with your uninformed, ignorant vote. In fact, if you look at the history books in America, you'll see that back in the old days, voting was limited in 1800s. At the late 1700s and early 1800s, only men voted and only owners voted. And they had reading tests. Now, today, reading tests are looked at as, oh, you're trying to keep people from voting. Oh, you're trying to keep minorities out. No, we're not trying to keep anybody from voting or minorities out. We're trying to keep ignorant people, stupid people, people who have done their homework, from having the wrong people put into office. So that's why younger people were kept out. The minimum age was 21. Some states more, 25. Okay. So it's very, and I'll give a classic example of that today. I go on YouTube and see these commercials by Hillary Rodham Clinton. She says, oh, I was always for children. They show a two second clip. She was for children when she was in her 20s and said that few words. Again, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, she said those words, those lies, that she cares about children. And they say, see, basically, they based upon those lies she repeated over 40 years plus. See, that's a woman that cares about children. If you care about children, you want to vote for Hillary Rodham Clinton. And guess what? The reason they put those ads on television or YouTube or whatever, online and in television, is because obviously they work. Obviously, there's a lot of stupid people out there that hear that. Oh, geez, this woman has said since she was in her 20s, repeatedly, she cares about children, fights for children. I mean, come on. Who doesn't care about children? Seriously, very, very few people. Okay, most people love children. You know, and really, you know, if that's all you got to say, I would say you got nothing to offer. Because those mean nothing. These are liars. But you see, there's enough people, dumb, stupid people, that will vote in ignorance. Just because, oh, Hillary Clinton sounded so good. She's wonderful, loves children. I'm going to vote for her. That they put those ads out there. So the purpose of those laws that were put in place to keep young people was because younger people tend to be, on the average, dumber, on the average, less informed, on the average, less educated. I mean, there's a reason why we don't let people under 18 vote. Otherwise, why don't we let people vote at age 16, 14, 12, 10? You know, hey, they should have, they're human beings. They have a right to have input. The founding fathers had the number be higher to make sure you were more informed, more educated, were more likely to make informed choices. Women didn't vote. Now, I'll tell you something. I'm going to tell you something controversial. I believe right to vote to women was a mistake. You say, oh, Payman, you're a sexist. No, I'm not sexist. I love women and children. I got girls. But the fact of the matter is, women on the average are more emotional than men. We men are less emotional, right? I mean, how often do women accuse you of being an insensitive guy? You men are insensitive. Well, because by nature, men are not as sensitive as women. That's God made us different. It's more than just our genitals that are different. Physically, we're different. Emotionally, we're different. Women are more sensitive, and they're more emotional, which means they're more susceptible to their emotions being used to be deceiving them. Emotions like love, but also fear. That's right. Fear is the number one tool of politicians. All these wars we go into. How about the bank bailout? Goldman Sachs and these big banks and Bank of America, all these crooks were bailed out because, oh, if we don't bail out the big rich banksters, oh, the economy will go down the drain. You all will be hurt far worse. We have to bail out the big banksters. It's all done with fear. And women, on average, are more susceptible to fear, working to manipulate their decisions. Men, on the average, are less susceptible. So that's why women didn't have the right to vote with founding fathers. They knew that was the case. The giving women the right to vote and younger people was all part of the plan to dilute the vote of the older, mature, knowledgeable men who focus more on the candidates, who's a better man, get to know them, and have them be in office. Also, landowners used to vote. If you lived in a county, you could vote if you own land. If you're a renter, you're a transient person in transit, very likely you didn't own the land, you didn't vote. Why they didn't let you vote? Because you did not have much at stake as opposed to the landowners who own the land, chose to make that land their home for decades, if not their lifetime, very likely. Renters were much less likely to stay there and in that land long term. You see, folks, these are all averages. This is not all like that. Let me tell you something. When I was 10 years old, 11 years old, I knew about politics in Iran and Middle East a lot more than most adults at that time. Why? Because I heard my father talk with his friends about those things when I was sitting next to him. We had no TV back then in Iran. I had no toys. We went someplace. I sat next to my dad, listen. And I learned a lot that way. I also had no toys, read the newspapers about what's going on out there. So I knew a lot about the thing as a 10-year-old, knew a lot more than a lot of adults. Now, you could say, well, Peyman, you were smart enough. You should be able to vote at age 10. But the problem is, who is going to judge which 10-year-old is smart enough to vote, educated enough to vote, and which one is not? That power cannot be given to anybody to make that decision. So that's why voting is done by the people who are most educated, least emotional, who can think clearly, make the right decision straight. So we keep young people out, keep women out of voting, and also keep the people who are not landowners out of voting. Because after all, what does it matter who gets elected as long as it's the right person? That's all you want. Carl in Wisconsin, all he wants is a fair trial by the law and the Constitution, which if it's done right, he should be acquitted. The charge should be dismissed. Does it matter who voted for them or not, how many votes they got or not? Not really. As long as the process got the right person, the good person, the wise person, intelligent person, the honest person, educated person got in there, that's all that matters. Doesn't matter if I voted for him or you. No, doesn't matter. The result is what we want. And that's why if you go back to human history before voting was even invented, okay, by the banksters, they started voting in England in the 1600s before they were all kings. That's what it started in England, the voting issue in Parliament. The elders of a community, of a tribe, of the area, picked the leaders. The elders were the most knowledgeable, the wisest, the most educated, who lived there. They cared about each of their wives and children and grandchildren. These people then didn't get to be 50, 60 years old, 70 years old, and not care about their family and friends and community and children. Of course they cared. And they were older and wiser. These older men made the decision for the community. And that's how humanity made the decisions. Not always the right ones. Anyhow, I just want to share that with you as something to think about. Because the system that we have right now hasn't been working very well. What we have is there's a strong number of people who want to work for someone like a criminal liar like Clinton. They don't care. They don't care. To them, they say, I'm a progressive. I'm a Democrat. I'm a bleeding heart liberal. I care for the poor, the minorities, the disadvantaged, blah, 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 blah. And then you got a bunch of people who say, I'm conservative. I'm for law and order. I'm for, whatever, military, this, more freedom, maybe, maybe not, pro-life, X, Y, Z. Some people more libertarian-oriented on the right, some people more communist on the left. And they got a lot of ignorant people in the middle. Ignorant people in the middle who are persuaded by lying advertisings of politicians like Hillary Clinton cares about children. Okay? Those are the ones that end up choosing the people who run our government, the politicians. So what we gotta do, we have a system where we get rid of these ignoramuses who go vote and they get fooled by the lies and deception of these corrupt people whose lies are repeated on television and on internet ads repeatedly. And they say, she looks good to me. He looks good to me. He sounds good to me. She sounds good to me. Oh, the other guy is bad. Like all the lies they try to say that Trump is racist is absolutely baseless. But when Washington Times, New York Times, LA Times, all the major media in the US and CNN, okay, and NBC and CBS, ABC, they all repeat these lies, guess what? A lot of dummy liars think it's so because they just hear it so many times. Just because a lie is repeated, they think it's true because they heard it so many times. A lot of people don't think. They do not investigate the claims made on media to see if it's true. They don't think about it. They don't analyze it. They don't check it. So we, in my opinion, if we have a better system, if you get rid of all those people that cannot think and have the most qualified people think. In fact, in my opinion, if you have men over age 25 or 30 vote, would be even better. Okay. It would be much more difficult to get corrupt people in office who get in there with lies and deception and money of corrupt banksters and corporations who put out those lies on behalf of the crooks. So with that, folks, I want to open up the call to see if anybody else have any questions or comments about this. If you do, just go ahead and give me your first name and a telephone area code you're calling from. We'll talk about that. And if not, I'll end the call. So anybody have any questions or comments about this subject, you're welcome to speak up now.
Yeah, it's Kevin again.
Yes, from what area code? You calling from, Kevin? 847. Yes, my friend. Yes. What's on your mind, Kevin?
In addition to what I was first asking, I forgot to tell you that there was no judgment first. So the cops, they're trying to bypass court, and they just sent it straight to a debt collector, and there's no judgment. And I went to the website to check the ticket to see if there was a case, to see if there was a case number, and there's nothing. So, do you remember what I said, or would you like me
to? Yes, I do remember. I remember very well what you said, my friend. I want you to go and double check that in the courthouse yourself. Okay, verify that's what happened. If that's what happened, of course, then what you want to do? You want to go file a civil rights lawsuit in a federal court against the cops. Against anybody involved in that case for damages.
Okay.
And to set aside the claim because there's no judgment at all. You don't need to set aside something that's not even there. Just go sue these guys. But go to court and make sure and check. Get as much information as you can. Get a copy of any file that may be on that ticket in the court file. You're welcome, my friend. Okay, folks, thank you for being on the call with me. Next Thursday night, I will cover the second part of the three-part series on Professor Jonathan Siegel of George Washington Law University, who failed to collect Freedom Law School's $300,000 income tax reward. We'll talk about that, show you the laws that are relied upon, why the income tax system is a scam and a fraud. Tell your friends. They're not sure. They're curious. They're doubters. They think I'm wrong. Invite them to call. Invite them to find out. Have them help you collect that $300,000 income tax reward that you can split with them. We all need money. So go to your friends. Folks, I will send you nice copies on glossy paper of the $300,000 income tax reward to give to your friends. Give it to the most educated people you know, the most intelligent people you know, the most successful people you know, the richest people you know, people in government, lawyers, judges, doctors. You know, have fun. Okay. Hey, I could use some money. I'm trying to get $300,000 reward, but I'm having trouble. You know, I couldn't do it myself. I need your help. Can you show me this? You know, the first 100,000 is the law that requires Americans to file income tax. I just can't find it. You know, you file income tax, right? You know, well, yeah. Oh, well, where's the law? I just can't find it. Could you help me find it and collect this and go down the line? You know, this reward says, how can we, you know, fill out this 1040 forms without giving up our Fifth Amendment right to be silent? You know, how can we do that? You know, these, you know, Hillary Clinton people want to be silent, and they were going to force them to talk, and they gave him immunity before they talked. Well, I'm on immunity before I sign my 1040. I'm immunity from prosecution, but they won't give it to me. It seems like we have to give up our rights when we fill out the 1040 form. How can we not give up those rights and fill out the 1040 form at the same time? And third, hey, you know, the government says it was the 16th Amendment of the Constitution that created the basis, the lawful basis for the federal income tax. Well, apparently that was never properly ratified as required by the U.S. Constitution. But, hey, if you can show how it was done right, and it should be there, the record should be there, the government files, we can collect another 100,000 for this one too. Let's go for it, man. Let's have some fun. Let's get some cash. But you got to promise me, please, when you get the answer, because you're more educated than me, you got a degree, you got a law degree, you're a lawyer, you're a doctor, you're a businessman, you're successful, you know, you're government official, yeah, you know, whatever. You don't forget about me. Okay, let's do it together. Go half and half. I show you the reward. You get the answer, but we split it. Fair enough. Argue about the percentage. Make that issue. Because then it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to do it. The only issue is what's going to be a split between the two of you of the reward. All right, guys. So with that, thank you for being with me. Have a good night. I'll be back with you again next Thursday night. Good night, everybody.